Jenny woke to thunder. There was no light yet. She reached into the darkness and found a tin of wooden matches on the ammunition case beside her bed. She selected one and struck it on the case. The flame flared red, then yellow, and sulfurous smoke rose. Newborn shadows danced on the walls of the hut. She touched the match to the wick of a candle, and a light grew up from it like a yellow flower tinged with blue. Smoke hung in the still, wet air. The interior of the hut seemed at once bare and cluttered. The walls were unpainted board. The floor was buckled plywood. Against one wall was a crude desk made out of a door. A few photographs tacked the wall above it. Her mother at home, near Chicago. Snapshots of the bonobos. Her friend Donna with the bonobos at the zoo. Jenny swung her feet to the floor and listened. She'd heard the hissing of the rain all night. But now another sound had crept in. She pulled on her boots and stood, tall and tan and rangy in the yellow light. She ran her hand through her sandy hair and secured it carelessly behind her head. She heard the sound again. Thunder. But now she heard the metallic overtones as the report echoed up into the hills, then returned. As she grew more awake, Jenny realized that she was hearing guns. Big guns. The Congolese insurgents were firing rocket-propelled grenades. It had been a calculated risk for her to be here. But she had found the beautiful great apes, known as bonobos, irresistible. Year after year, she had returned despite the danger. The fighting had flared and died down and flared up again for more than a decade and a half. Now the Civil War had begun in earnest, and she had to leave immediately. Her old friend, David Meese, at the British Embassy in Kinshasa, had warned her in no uncertain terms,
"You have no value, and so they will kill you. When the shooting starts, go to the river as quickly as you can."
Whistling overhead. Another charge of metallic thunder. The concussion shook the pots above the camp stove. She heard answering fire from another direction. She had expected to have more warning. An hour, half an hour. But they were upon her. She grabbed a flashlight, the machete, and the backpack that she kept ready for travel. She picked up a bottle that was half full of water and drank it in one long, bubbling draft. Gasping for air, she picked up a full bottle and clipped it to her belt. She stepped out the door and into the clearing. She knew that entering the forest at night was a risk, but staying would be worse. She looked back at her hut and felt a rush of sadness, even as her pulse pounded in her neck. Then she turned and ran toward the forest, feeling the water sway uncomfortably in her gut. The rain had stopped. The jungle before her was black and glistening in the flashlight beam. She had promised herself that she would make an effort to reach the British researcher, Donald Stone, whose observation post was on the way to the river. He had been courteous enough the few times she'd seen him, but their camps were far enough away that it had made dropping in for a casual visit impractical. All she knew was that he was studying bonobos too, but didn't seem to want to collaborate. Nevertheless, Jenny had decided to do her best to help him if it ever came to that. She'd heard that he had a daughter, and if so, well, this was no place for a child. As she loped through the forest along familiar paths, she heard the low thump of a mortar, the whistling of the shell, then the steely shock of another explosion to the east. She smelled smoke. Then came the sporadic firing of automatic weapons. As she hurried on, the first light of day began to penetrate the forest canopy. She switched off her flashlight and let her eyes adjust. Another shell went off, and she ran ahead. Think. Think. What was next? Check on Donald Stone, then get to the river. If she could find someone with a radio, David would help, if he was still there. If the embassy was still standing, if. She ran on through the day, following the one broad path that she knew led in the direction of Stone's camp. She was concerned for the bonobos. They were amazingly strong, yet paradoxically delicate creatures. The shock of loud noises could kill them. On the other hand, they were smart. They'd be miles away by now in the tops of the trees. Sometimes it seemed to Jenny that they were almost human. In graduate school in 1987, she had gone to work with the largest population of bonobos in captivity at the Milwaukee Zoo. They were among the last of the great apes. The first time Jenny had locked eyes with the dominant female at the zoo, she knew that she was looking at a creature who was far more like her than unlike her. Whenever she wasn't working, she'd spend hours watching the bonobos. But once she'd gone to Congo to see them in the wild, she knew where she belonged.